A number of years ago, I started not eating in the mornings, and then I found out it was called intermittent fasting. But a curious thing happens once in a while, and it's happening right now, is that sometimes I get really hungry and my stomach starts to grumble. So you may hear it even at your distance from me. Especially if you come up for the Festival of Light Blessing, you'll definitely hear me. But it's safe. And please, do not feed me either. But anyways, it is a joy to be with all of you and spend this time. And I was thinking that car alarm, you know, the horn that went off, probably none of you heard it because you're so deep in your concentration. But I was thinking, it ties into the subject matter today, that when we're really focusing the right way, those things still are obvious to us. We're still aware that that car alarm is doing its thing, but it doesn't become the driving point of that moment for us. It just is happening. So that's my Sunday talk. I'd like to read you from Whispers from Eternity, Paramahansa Yogananda's book of prayer demands. Open our heart bud to thy love, and let the fragrance of our love escape its prison of ego to merge in thee. O winds of cosmic perception, may our fragrance be swept to thy temple of infinity. O king of all true ambition, throw open wide thy windows everywhere. In the red cloud at sunset, in the rosy glad clouds at dawn, in every charm-clad dream of human hopes. Open the doors of all noble aspirations that lead out from our ego cottages onto the vast panorama of thy bliss. Let our fragrance blow with thy breath, reminding all nature of thy unseen presence. So a few weeks ago, I had the blessing of taking a week of seclusion up at our Ananda meditation retreat. And it was very special, very deep, a sacred time. And one of the things that I did every day, and most of us do this in seclusion, is go for a walk. So I spent an hour about midday. I timed it as best I could so that everyone else is eating lunch and then I could go out and not encounter people. But there's a small mountain, it's called a mountain, called Baal Mountain, that's just a little distance away from the meditation retreat property. And it doesn't really seem like a mountain when you're at that level, it's just more like a hill. But there's this obvious trail that goes off the main trail, and the trail goes up in the midst of manzanita trees and dwarf cedar trees. And so it's a beautiful walk, but you're surrounded by things. And you get to a certain point, not that far up, where a little trail goes off of that main trail. And the main trail is not very big, but it goes off, and then there's this clearing with a somewhat circular thing of large stones that somebody has put there. Because this land up there is revered property by the Maidu tribe of Native Americans that's indigenous to this area. So it has a long history of being a revered place for gathering. And I pause, because I've been up to this many, 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 many times in many years. But I pause. It just struck me to go deeper into a meditative experience right there and then. And I was just tuning in, feeling this, and I felt a deep centering experience of my spiritual eye. I could feel there's an essence here that is available, but also my willingness to tune into it was there. And it felt very, very just deep and rich as an experience. And I felt very inward in that experience. And then after a while, I continued up the walk of the trail that goes up just a little bit further and to this point where there's a bunch of ragged boulders. And you can climb up on these boulders pretty easily and stand on the top one. And at that point, the vast vista is there. About 270 degrees. There's some trees on one level, on one side of it that blocks the complete 360 vision. But here, as I focus on meditating and drawing from that, the vast vista, it was like tuning into the infinity of the spiritual eye. I could feel this is the experience. As we go deeper within into that experience of the spiritual eye, we also have this expansive energy that goes out into infinity. And it was quite remarkable. I visited several more times because I did other hikes around the area as well during my week. But each time I could just resonate and feel this is a symbolic reflection that's always happening within our own selves. What we need to do, like that circle of stones and that pile of ragged boulders, is feel it's more permanent always in our lives. You know, that circle of stones is there to visit all the time. We likewise need to really feel the spiritual eye is always available for us, not only to visit, but to come to that deep experience of merging into it. Because the challenge for us isn't that God isn't there. The divine is always there. We're not always there to receive that experience. And what happens for us is that we start to identify that which isn't really our true nature. It is the nature of Maya, of duality, that happens. It's set up that way for us to really be clear, dynamic, and open to want the spiritual path above all else. You know, there's an interesting dialogue in the Bhagavad Gita. Well, the whole Bhagavad Gita is an interesting dialogue between Krishna the Lord and Arjuna, who represents each one of us as the devotee. And it's towards the end of the first chapter and into the beginning part of the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And this is where Arjuna displays an interesting behavior and thought process, where he feels more and more that he doesn't want to fight the battle with his, inside himself, between the warring factors of the ego soldiers and the soul soldiers of the soul. And he gets to this point where he actually says, I won't fight, because how can I do harm to these family members, i.e. the qualities within myself? Perhaps they're ego-driven, perhaps they're negative, but they're still mine. And there's this tussle that goes on, and then he finally says, I will not fight. And Krishna, of course, is very understanding of Arjuna, but he kind of poses some points, and then the rest of the 17 chapters is simply going further and deeper into that understanding of what our role is in life, and especially as we become sincere devotees, what's trying to unfold in every part of our lives. And Krishna says this interesting thing. He says, you must also have acts of wisdom along with your thoughts that are wise. And I've never paid attention to that, because there are so many other amazing statements that Krishna is making right at that time to Arjuna. But it was an interesting one, that sometimes we can feel we have wisdom. We can grab that understanding. We feel we've got a hold of it. And yet, that's where it remains. And what Krishna is saying to him is that you have the wisdom, Arjuna. You have the wisdom of a true sage. But now you need to also let that come into manifest form. Let that come into the experience of really every moment of your life. You know, there's a wonderful, and I'm going to not quote it completely right, although the quote I'm going to say of Shakespeare is the one that many people use, but I think it's slightly different when you go to his writing. So this is from Hamlet, the play Hamlet. And it's from Hamlet speaking to his mother. And she's been behaving in not so dharmic ways. Let's put it that way, from our perspective. And Hamlet, again, just has a very interesting comment to his mother, trying to help her, support her in moving towards what we would call dharma, the right thing to do. And he says to her, assume a virtue though you have it not. And again, I think the wording truly accurately isn't quite that, but it's close. Assume a virtue though you have it not. Now, that allows us to bring intention with movement. It allows us to not just sit with it, but to have an experience, and in this case, Hamlet's saying, with a virtue. But this is interesting too. Assume a virtue. Where are you assuming it from? Because if you're assuming it from your ego, it's going to be problematic. It's going to take you into more of a separation from life itself. And you'll identify it with, I am doing this. Whereas if you assume a virtue from your soul nature, then you're assuming your true identity, not the false identity coming from the ego. And so it's up to us to really gather our tools, whether they be discrimination, discernment of jnana yogi, of being in that purity of divine love so we can see where the differences between emotion and devotion, or we can see it in terms of being a pure instrument where we're opening up clear and clear for that divine to move through us, as Krishna said to Arjuna, to have it in action as well. But really, if you look at each situation we get involved in, we have always the possibility of that choice. But sometimes we're not at all clear that we even have a choice, let alone that we're going to choose the right way. Because that is the perfect setup from the divine of really testing us to make sure we really want to have our oneness in God. It's not just in comparison to something else. Yeah, I'll take God instead of, you know. It's not so much that Krishna is saying that in the Gita. He's saying you really need to move forward with finding what your true goal is in life and not carry on as if it's not much of a choice. Well, it's not much of a choice in the end because it's the destiny of the soul. But we get mixed up. We think, ice cream, going to Sunday service. Sagar, my dear friend, has solved that. He has both. And I think a lot of us do that as well. I was kidding because he and I are going to go on an adventure. As Winnie the Pooh would say it, exposition. Expedition? No. Exportition, yeah. Not an expedition. A little bit different. To do some programs in New Zealand and Australia. We're going in a couple weeks' time. And I happened to mention to our folks, Kalamali and Nara in Australia, that do we need money? You know, Australian cash, because Sagar has a penchant for ice cream. And she wrote back, well, we'll figure that one out for sure. You know, we'll go out for ice cream. But we can have ice cream, and again, Sagar is a good example of this. We can have ice cream in the divine. It doesn't have to be separate from the divine that's going off on some tangent. We can be in that experience completely now. But it has to do with offering. The choices will come in the right way if we're offering ourselves in that way to God. Because even if you think of affirmation in its deeper sense isn't so much I'm going somewhere like the one for today, humility, that we're affirming I want to be more humble, have more humility in my life. Really what we're doing when we use affirmations, we're creating an integrated experience of that which is already ours. Humility is a natural expression of who we are if we clear out the other stuff of the ego saying, but wait about me, I need my say in this. Humility is that purity of just opening up to the greatest possibility in that moment. And so when we use an affirmation, we're really tapping into the depth of who we are and letting that be expressed. So we're not creating this thing with the words of happening to us. We're connecting, we're integrating, we're coming to the fullness of that experience. And that's slightly different, isn't it, than a lot of us tend to relate to doing things. Even with every part of the path, you think of doing the yoga asanas. It isn't about getting to a point. That will happen, but the focus is on opening up to that experience. Because in my seclusion, I spent a lot more time with all the practices, but also with the yoga postures. And I found some revelations, in a sense, from that. Now, I found those in meditation, but I don't often get the revelations from doing yoga postures, but I do them every day. But what I experienced was that if I just let go a little bit more, for instance, I was doing the forward bend called Paschimottanasana, the forward stretching pose where you're on your buttocks with your legs in front and you bring the upper body up, stretching up, and then come over and stretch out. And I was realizing I was just doing it by rote, you know, by habit. And I thought, but let me feel what the experience really is going within more. And the affirmation for the pose really serves this: I am safe, I am sound. All good things come to me. They give me peace. Well, I am safe, I am sound. We're attuning to, I'm in that deeper sense of who I am energy-wise. I am safe, I am sound. All good things come to me. Opening up to that experience, the divine is always flowing to me. I am safe, I am sound. All good things come to me. They give me peace. They're always offering you peace, whether you're in that yoga posture or doing whatever you're doing in life. That is always the experience that's available to us. Our role is to say yes to life, to open up to that more and more. So we're not kind of, you know, weighing that maybe this isn't right for me. Well, often with spiritual practices, it's more that we're needing to say, I'm opening to it, and then it'll be refined from our inner experience. And this is why we have this emphasis of the art and science of yoga, the art and science of meditation, the art and science of Kriya, because it's more about tuning in than just doing something. And so when we do the simplest acts, we're allowing ourselves the possibility of doing it from our center everywhere, circumference nowhere. And yesterday I took the time in the morning, because I'll be gone for several weeks, as I mentioned, I took the time to weed eat. I probably disturbed Sergio and Narayani's meditations because they were staying right beside where we are. Hopefully that didn't happen. But I was thinking, I was weed eating, that I can take the buzz of the weed eater and feel this is an unusual form of the vibration of Om. And I was just so going around doing it and tuning in, feeling that. And you can feel it to some degree as well from the weed eater. But that idea that it's an offering into that possibility rather than saying, I'm just doing this. And the more that we do that, it really reflects this question: how high should we aspire? Always to the highest possibility in each moment. That may be different than someone else's highest point of aspiration in that moment, but that's not part of who we are. Our part is simply to be clear, open, and allowing the highest possibility to happen in that moment. Because whether we achieve that or not, we're going to open up to it more and more. I mean, Parvati was describing the purification ceremony in an important way, that we we need to do our part. I seek purification by the grace of God. And then she said this interesting point that I always appreciate hearing from her, that as we're purified, are we completely pure in that moment? And the question is yes and no. The question is answered by yes or no, because we may have karma that isn't resolved completely, or it may be completely gone. But our concern isn't about that. Our focus should be in that letting go and opening up to that experience. Because then it's in God's realm of what grace will happen to us. And maybe there's more karma that needs to be worked out to allow us to feel that complete purification. Or it may be in that moment. But our role is not to judge what the experience is, but to open up more of the experience. When we can do that, then God can come in. The divine can come in its flow. And grace will be there in that moment, flowing in the way that it needs to flow, and allows us to even gain more receptivity, more openness, and more clarity from that experience. So when Krishna says, asks this question about, or he says this, that rare is the Mahatma, the great soul, that is able to save from experience all is Vasudeva. And what that means, all is Vasudeva, means all is Krishna. Krishna has one of the names as Vasudeva. And Krishna is, of course, the divine. So it's really saying, it's not always the common thing where people will feel everything is God. Everything in creation, everything beyond creation is just the divine. Our path, our role is both unique and shared, that we want to open up to that presence, that divine experience, so that even if it comes time for us to leave our bodies, a dear friend of ours living in the community, Sue Stickney, passed away the other evening. And I think for a lot of us, it creates the openness to really look more carefully at our lives, not out of judgment, but out of just discernment, understanding. And I know for me, when I heard about it yesterday morning, of Sue's passing, I just immediately stepped back from what I was doing. I was sitting down, but I tuned in, and one felt the blessings from her, but also sending the blessings to her soul in its transition into the astral realm with the divine. But if we can take something like that and then transpose it into every aspect of our lives, then God is ours, and we can say, truly, all is God, all is Vasudeva. Let us ensure that by being receptive, being open, and let our hearts, minds, and consciousness always engage in every moment in that way. Blessings to you.
Life is a dream, time like a stream. draw.